Last time we discussed the two possible options of going to implement the non-blocking write for file system, given that we're blocking every time that we have a metadata miss. The two options were by using a different thread to flush the non-blocking writes at the moment they occur, and the second option was just to keep them until an fsync comes and doing the same process context. And pretty much what we decided was to start implementing and see which one makes more sense as we go. Right, okay. Just left right now, so I guess we can wait for it.
So are we still thinking of the thread that we talked about last time? To fetch pages.
Yes,
in a queue?
That's one of the options. The other one is just to use the same process context to flush and to fetch and flush everything, but when the fsync is called.
I see.
But if I remember correctly, with both solutions, we need to be careful with the pdflush demo and how we affect it.
Okay.
So basically, that was where we got. I was browsing again the code.
Yep.
And I think that they do cache the metadata buffers too.
They do. Okay.
For some reason, I think what they do is they create a page for those buffers and they put it in the LRU.
Mm-hmm.
So they will look up first in that page before trying to do the read.
Okay, that makes sense.
But
how does the...
Yeah, it's sort of weird because the way that page is allocated and used is different. It is.
Because the VFS doesn't see that page. It's only used by the file system.
I don't know. I think so, yes.
The VFS... Well, the VFS doesn't know about the existence of the page.
This page won't be in the mapping. It won't happen.
It won't be in the mapping. It won't... There would not be... there would be no updates, and because there is no
I think they could have updates if they allocate a new block or something. Probably they would have some updates.
But the VFS doesn't know what the page contains, so it doesn't know how to flush the update, right? Or maybe it's no.
I don't know, but they use different functions for that. We could give it a look, but as far as I understand, they create a page for the buffers.
Okay.
Instead of how I saw it before, that they had the page and then they created buffer heads for that page.
Mm-hmm.
Here, they get the buffers, mm-hmm. and then I think they create a page to associate to the buffers. And
the only question I have
and they
is
put
that
it in the library.
If those buffers are being updated, how do they get updated? Maybe the updates are coming through a different route and eventually the file system will look up the buffer.
Well, updates will happen probably on the get block function when they need to allocate a new block.
No. What I mean is, let's say the buffer contains an indirect block within the file system, that there is no equivalent from a VFS standpoint. It's an internal file system specific metadata.
Yes.
That VFS doesn't know what to do with it, right? If an update happens to that buffer, it can only happen from within the file system logic. It cannot happen.
Yes.
It's a
yes.
It's a side effect of some other update.
Yes.
That's happening. Right?
This is metadata, yes.
It's internal metadata for the file system. Not even metadata that the VFS knows about, such as an inode or something like that.
Mm-hmm. Do you want to browse the code and
see it? Sure, why not? It seems like fun. We are having fun looking at the code every time.
And can you guys share the desktop?
Sure. Okay, share screen. You see it?
Let me see. Yeah, I'm looking at it.
Okay,
you can look start for an EC2 get block.
Should I look at our...
whichever I think it should. Well, maybe ours, but... No, let's start. Elephant should be the best, because we have...
Elephant open graph or something like that.
I think it was source.
Source. Okay, what am I looking for?
EXT2 get block.
Make this bigger so Lewis can see as well. This one?
Yes.
Okay.
That one calls get. Okay, this one first does a weird thing to me. He takes a buffer head as an argument, and for some reason the buffer head could be mapping several blocks for some reason. Because this first instruction is sort of getting the size of the buffer head of the buffer and dividing it by how many the size of the block on the inode.
No, it's just telling you
how many blocks that buffer head is mapping, right? That's how I understood.
Mm-hmm.
But I thought I understood that the buffer heads mapped one to one. Buffer and blocks were one to one, right?
It seems like it's converting from bytes to blocks. That's it.
Oh.
But this,
why would it be more than one block?
Because my guess is that the buffer head can map multiple blocks in the file system.
Yeah, that's the part that I didn't get, because I assumed that buffer heads were one-to-one to blocks.
No. So I don't remember exactly how the buffer heads work. But I think it maps contiguous more than one contiguous block.
Okay. Well, that was my weird thing. The first weird thing that I found. I thought that they were one to one.
Okay.
But sort of irrelevant.
By the way, it's one to one with the page in this case. I mean, there is one buffer head per page.
The page can have more than one buffer head. That I know
you could
for
have
sure.
More than one buffer head.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. So.
What's next?
It is sort of irrelevant. It will be pretty much this is a wrapper for the other one.
This one?
Head blocks. Yes. This one is the one that a little bit down. In get branch is where it starts reading all the indirect blocks.
Mm-hmm.
So if you get to get branch, you will see that it will be cycling while that to read all the blocks, all the indirect blocks. So that one be read is the one that does the reads for the indirect blocks. Which is okay, this one calls get block.
This is just getting a block from a device.
Yeah, the thing is that before I think I click on B read is slow.
Yeah.
Can you click there? And I think that one is the one that is doing the read. Yeah, this is submitting the bio the buffer head and waiting on it.
Yeah.
This one is the one that is doing the actual read. But I didn't
That get block sounds like the old buffer cache.
Exactly. So, I didn't look on the other one. And when I went today to look on the get block, if you go back, that one is the one that is sort of caching the things.
You this one?
Yes.
Yeah, so that get block basically gives... It definitely gets a buffer head, but if the buffer head was in memory before, it will keep that buffer head and it will be up to date.
Find get block?
Yes, find get block. So
it is similar to find get page, right? And it's probably looking in some cache.
Yeah.
LRU.
Uh-huh.
So that's the lookup buffer head in the CPU's LRU. In this CPU's LRU. Why is it this CPU's LRU? I don't understand that. How does it depend on the CPU?
Well, I don't know.
This could be on any CPU. Maybe what they mean is if you find buffer head anywhere, put it in this CPU's LRU. No?
I don't think so. They get these buffer head LRUs. They get the one.
Who is calling this function?
This is being called by get_get_block.
Oh, okay.
See, here. Uh-huh. Find get block, which was called by __get_block.
Oh, okay. So even if he doesn't find it here.
Yeah.
He calls this get block slow.
Yeah.
Which I guess is when he misses.
Allocates a buffer head.
Can you repeat?
My guess is that one allocates a buffer head.
Yes, here, find get block allocates a buffer again. That's the one that we were looking at.
Hmm.
And then if he doesn't find it, he calls this grow buffers.
Hmm.
If you click on that one is creating a page of some sense to...
Hmm.
I think the comment said something about it.
Create buffers for the specified block device's blocks page.
Sort of create a dummy page or something like that. And adds that page to an LRU. Yeah, but this to me seems like the buffer cache. And I saw that thing didn't exist anymore.
I think the buffer cache is, you know, that it got merged with the page cache here. You can see that merging happening because the buffer cache is not separate. It's the buffers are kept as part of a page and then added to the page is added to the page cache.
Okay.
That's the way I see it. So it's a workaround for the merging of the buffer cache and the page cache because you don't have buffer cache anymore. And the only place you can cache is the page cache. You create a page and add it to the page LRU list. So they're still creating the ability to cache buffers, although there's no explicit buffer cache.
So a quick question, how do they find a page? Where is that page populated?
I think a little bit down. Look at the pointer was there, grow the page.
Where?
On the top, it's just initializing the page pointer. But over here, if you go down here, grow the page is returning.
Grow dev page.
That page.
Create a page with the proper size buffer.
So what does that grow the page?
Okay, let's go in and see. Find or create page.
My guess is that it looks for...
It
looks in the page cache. My point is that it seems like they remove the buffer head cache and set a path to the page cache. So they try to find the page which corresponds to this buffer head and then populate that page with this buffer.
I'm interested in what the index is.
Well, it's an argument of the function you can go by and try.
No,
to
but this, if this is an internal, let's say, indirect block page, what index would you use to find that page?
That index in the normal page cache is a index in the file.
That's right, but here that's not the case because this is for an indirect.
Sure.
An indirect
block. If you go back, you can see the index where the index comes from.
Yeah.
Not that.
Next
much.
One.
Yeah, here they are passing the index as an argument. Should we know? Index.
There is. Which index is equal block size bit.
Where do you see the initialization?
Go up.
A bit up.
Oh, sorry. Okay.
Oh, there.
Yeah, there.
What
index
is block?
Is block size bits.
Block is coming from flat side. Steer.
Where is the block coming from? Whoa. Where is the block coming from? I'm trying to find out where block is coming from. Okay, it's coming from somewhere here.
There, the key.
LE32 to CPU.
Key.
P,
they
key.
They in the description of this function, they mention what is everything.
What is P key?
Here. I think it's the block in the disk.
You mean the logical block address in the disk?
They said chain.key contains the number of E plus one blocks in the chain.
As it is stored in memory. It points into struct inode for I equals 0 and into.
No, that's P.
Chain.p. So we want chain.key, right?
Mm-hmm.
Contains the number of the I plus 1th block in the chain. No idea what that is. Depth of the chain. 1 minus indirect pointer offsets. So is this a different mapping for the metadata of a file versus the data of the file? Or is they, are they using the same mapping? The data and metadata for a file?
Probably it's the same, right?
But
because
mean,
if the direct block will have an address in the LBA of the disk, right?
Mm-hmm.
And the indirect block will have also an address of, in the LBA of
yeah,
the
but
disk.
Then, but
so those blocks should be those addresses, right?
But the thing is that so then you cannot compute the page that you're trying to access just using the offset. Because you have to get all the indirect blocks information, which is why they need this, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
Because every time you access a page within a file, let's say. So, Lewis, I think your input would be useful here.
Okay.
If let's say an application tries to access some offset within a page.
Okay.
Offset within a file.
Okay.
How does the VFS look up the page cache?
So the file has an address space,
yeah.
And that address space has a tree which index pages by the offset of the file itself.
Okay.
Okay. So the
those are pages that are in the cache. Those are hits. What about misses?
No, even hits. I'm wondering about how the page within, given an offset, how is a page related to that offset calculated?
So, my guess is that that offset is divided by the size of the page.
Okay.
And then so that would be your index.
That's the mapping structure, right?
That's the address space structure.
Which is called mapping, right?
That's mapping.
That is called mapping.
That's the offset of the page in the address space of the mapping.
Yeah, so my guess is that what you saw there is that they somehow found the address of that file from the buffer head.
I don't think so. I think here block is the address in the disk.
And that's what I don't...
Because all of that is when you hit in the page cache. Okay, let's say that you miss. If you miss, we should go a little bit further up, which will be even before all of these two, is the one that is right before this, which is called block prepare write. I think it's __ block prepare write. That is the one that calls 62 get block. It's inside buffer.c if you want to look it manually.
Let's search this thing.
I think it's __ block prepare write. But I'm not sure about the underscore.
No, there's at least there's a function. So here I get an inode.
Uh-huh.
And from
a page.
The inode I can get the mapping.
And a page that you want to read.
And the page. But even before I get the page, how do I know which page to read? That's really what I'm interested in.
Okay. If you go down, exactly that's the problem that they're trying to solve. Since they don't know the buffer heads that they have associated with that page, they don't know what is the address that they need to read. They need to go get blog and go all of that.
Right, I understand that. But my question is, what is the offset within the mapping? How do they compute the offset within the mapping?
Oh, we need to go
even further up, right?
Yeah, we should go to...
Let me click on this and see where it's...
Generic perform write. That should be your...
Maybe here. Block write.
Okay.
Okay, here is mapping and position, right? Now,
they get the page by using this break cache page right here.
Mapping, index. Index, what is index now?
Index is a position divided by the size of the page.
And position is the file...
The file
file pointer, right? File.
Yeah. In bytes.
Find log page.
Yeah, this one trying to find it. And if it doesn't find it, then the next one will be...
So here, given the mapping and offset. Okay, they find get page. Find get page will go through
the tree
of pages inside using a specific index, right? Mm-hmm. So now that index has to be different than the index, there can be no overlap in the index or the mapping. One of those has to be distinct between metadata and data, right, for a file.
Maybe they don't add it to the mapping.
Because
the page exists, but they don't need... Maybe they don't add it to the mapping address space, the address space structure.
I wonder if the metadata is stored in the mapping of the device itself.
Mapping of the device? No. Because we saw that it's the mapping of the file that they're using.
Can we see that again?
I'll show you. Where did I see that mapping?
You're looking for index.
Yeah. Go back here. No. Get block slow. No, it's before this. Grow dev page. Maybe it's here.
Yeah.
There's a mapping.
Yeah, this is the one that will allocate the page. If you go a little bit down, here, there is a page returning there.
Here.
Okay.
This one.
Yeah, go inside.
So here, the find or create page and the mapping of the file. Is it, what is this inode? Is it the inode for the device or?
The inode.
Oh, yeah, you're right, Louis.
Yeah.
So this is the inode for the device.
Yeah.
I didn't know that they were.
Interesting.
Makes
sense,
devices.
Right?
It makes sense. Perfect sense, yeah.
Yeah.
Makes perfect sense. So you have a mapping for the device. And obviously, the only way to use the page cache is if you have a mapping. And what makes sense in this case for internal metadata file system is to use the mapping of the device itself.
There you go.
Yeah.
Makes sense, because when you read that file from user space,
mm-hmm.
that's exactly where you get to.
This is EXT2. EXT3 will be even more complicated because it implements journaling.
Yeah.
Okay.
No, but what I'm saying is that when you read that device file from user space, that this is exactly what you should get.
So our blocking is no longer explained by this, right?
Well, it will be the first time that it meets.
Yeah,
but
we are missing every time. Every time we are blocking every time. There is not one write, non-blocking write that has a really low latency. Everything has significant latency.
Well, since we were doing random writes, I cannot say how much we miss in metadata.
And it's a large file.
It was a fairly large 5 gigabytes.
5 gigabytes?
But our writes were 500, were 2Ks. So, assuming that the bit. Yeah, each write that we made was half a block.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Okay.
We can only. I mean. I would expect that. I don't know if they were aligned, though. I don't know if they were aligned to blocks or lines to 2K offsets. Because if they were aligned, then. Every time that we miss a block, probably we miss the metadata of the block.
Yeah, that's what I'm wondering. How much metadata are we looking at here? It's 5 gigabyte file. One indirect block will have, can address, how much is that? This is a test question for you in the OS class.
It should be 64 bits, right?
Yes, yeah, for 4K
divided by 64.
Yeah, 4K bytes and 64 bits, so 8 bytes. 4K divided by 8.
4 divided by 8 should be 512.
Mm-hmm. So 512
blocks.
Times
4K.
4K.
Which is 2 megabytes.
Mm. 2 megabytes, and so one indirect block can address 2 megabytes. So how many indirect blocks do you need for 5 gigabytes? I'm wondering if we expect all of these to be cached.
If we put another indirect block in front, it should be over 512 indirect blocks. So 512 times 2 megabytes would give us 1 gigabyte.
Hmm. That indirect block we should probably not miss.
No. We should have 5 of those.
Yeah, 5 of those, and we'll...
And then
the
512 times 5
yeah.
direct blocks, which is 2,500
pages.
Pages of direct blocks. Of the last.
That's... How much is that? That's...
2,500
times 4. That's 10 megabytes.
Times 5.
Times 5. So 50 megabytes.
2.5. Okay.
2,500 times 4K.
2.5K times 4K is 5 gigabytes, right?
No, no, no. 2.5.
We have...
I'm just wondering about the total size of the metadata here. Yeah, so every metadata block can has we need 5.
Sorry, what are you calculating?
How much is the total metadata size?
Okay.
For that file.
512 times 5, 2.5K. Blocks
times 4, 4K.
Times 4 should be 10 megabytes. Yes.
10 megabytes times 5. No, 5 already. So just 10 megabytes, the total metadata size.
I guess so, yes.
I'm guessing that's cached as well. How much is our memory?
Our memory is huge.
Yeah.
But...
I'm pretty sure that's cached.
No, the thing is the rate and when those reads happen.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if we were having around... Do you remember what was the rate of IA?
I remember latency was about 0.2.
How many IOs we have per second? It was less than 1,000, right?
Yeah.
So let's say 500.
Mm-hmm.
Just for the sake of argument. 500 per second. How many of these 500 are of these 2,500 of metadata?
500. It's random. You can expect every indirect block to be accessed once. Not every, but 500 indirect blocks to be accessed once.
Let's assume the worst case is that each of the data is mapped to a different direct block. That would be a worst case, right?
Yeah.
So we have 2.5K blocks. So in the worst case, we will have one indirect block.
Mm.
Well, the worst case will be the 5 indirect blocks that we read the first time. And then from the remaining 500, 245, just so the numbers match, 245 direct blocks and 250 data blocks. That will be the worst case, right?
I don't know what you're trying to do here. What are these? What do these represent? Those are the number of accesses?
Yeah, if we have on the first second 500 reads.
Yeah. And you're figuring out how those reads are distributed?
Yes. By the way, we have 500 data reads, right?
Yeah.
That's what we really had. But it turned out that they were not 500 reads, but they were 1,005 reads, right?
Mm.
Because for each read, we have to read
the
data.
I don't recollect
the
numbers.
No, but let's assume that we have, for a second, 500 reads. In the worst case, when we don't have anything, that 500 reads translate to 1,005 reads, right? Because we need to read one direct block per data block.
Yeah.
So in 4 seconds, we should already read everything in the worst case, right?
Yeah. That's true.
Now, we were looking at... at some stats where we had at least some, let's say, 10 non-blocking writes, 10 non-blocking, 10 patches outstanding. So then that would mean that one every 10 non-blocking writes will block for metadata. Right? So then that will mean that 500 reads will only read 50 direct blocks. If we have 2,500 of this, it will take, in the worst case, this divided by this seconds, which is 500 seconds, and read all the metadata. And then it makes sense. If we are missing...
Go a little slower. And
okay.
Also describe without the whiteboard so Lewis can understand.
Okay. If we have 500 reads, let's assume that we miss on metadata once every 10 reads. Okay? So if we're having 500 reads per second, data reads per second, we're actually having 500 data reads plus 500 metadata reads per second.
Because every... But we're missing only once every 10 reads.
Exactly. So if we did 500 reads, we only miss...
50.
50. We had to read 50 of these direct blocks because we missed. Okay? So if this is the rate of ORI of 500 reads per second, in order to read all the metadata blocks, we will have to spend 500 seconds. Because we're only reading 50 per second.
This is 2,500 divided by 50.
Which is this number divided by 50?
That's
2,500.
That's 50.
So 50 seconds. Still, it makes sense for experiments. Our experiment were 10-second experiments. 15-second experiments. Maybe we're just missing metadata. Because our rate for read is too slow. That's why when we move to the SSD, that we have higher rates, non-blocking rate was not doing that bad, but not that good. It was doing better. We were having rates of 4,000 reads per second. Maybe we got to the point that we read all the metadata and we stopped blocking.
And the experiment is set up so that it runs for 15 seconds or it runs for a certain number of transactions?
15 seconds. So that's
so
to
in
explain.
15 seconds, disks cannot read all the metadata.
Exactly. That will explain why with SSDs on the random, we were getting better, not what we expected, but better than vanilla. And with this, we were getting worse. Because we didn't have enough time to get all the metadata. That doesn't still explain why worse than vanilla. Because vanilla should do the same thing. But that explains the difference between these and SSDs.
But we are not doing significantly worse than vanilla. At least statistically, I think we're doing equal, right?
I don't remember that. The lines were sort of different. We could try to get those graphs. But maybe, yes, because of the rate that we're reading, metadata is still a problem. Assuming that we're missing on metadata 10% of the times.
Yeah.
Which doesn't make sense to miss 10% of the time. Well, I guess.
Okay, where am I? What should I be looking for here?
I don't know. One email with... Yes.
This one? One is disk and one is SSD. Lewis, can you see the graphs?
Yes. No.
No?
Let me see.
Random write. Disk. This is disk. Maybe we should look at this first.
Yes, this is disk. Vanilla was doing better. Significantly better. That I still don't understand. But what I'm trying to explain here is that with these rates of reads per second, we're missing too much in metadata. But with these other rates that we have here, random read write, we sort of, at the beginning, well, not at the beginning, that's different memory sizes. We might get to the point that we already have all the metadata and then we do better. That would be my explanation. And why both are different.
I see. That's interesting.
So that will mean that repeating this experiment for disks and let it run more time will let num-locking writes actually do better and random writes, or at least do similar. No, it should be better.
It should do better.
Well, I don't know if it should do better, because the thing is that we're blocking, let's keep the, I have one assumption here that I'm not sure if it's strong enough, but the assumption was that we were missing on metadata every 10 reads. Let's keep it to that assumption.
I think that assumption is only valid for the initial 15 seconds. Once the metadata cache is populated, then we won't miss. Because the size of the metadata is only 10 megabytes.
Okay.
And it's accessed much more frequently than the data.
Okay, yes. Because that will make the difference if in the future it will do better or not. Because if that remains...
Otherwise, we should do similarly in SSD, right? We do better in SSD.
Yes, it makes sense. So, in other words, I should be able to see how the amount of outstanding patches increases with execution.
One of the issues is with non-blocking writes that it uses more memory. But the memory is freed up as soon as the page is ready. At least with the current implementation, which is non-lazy. Right? So running the experiment for longer, certainly we should do that. And
we could see if these start behaving like SSDs.
Yeah. And if you want to measure steady state performance, then we should have a warm-up period as well, where the metadata is cached.
Yeah.
What is this workload file bench?
Yeah, that's tricky. Just to cache the metadata and not the whole data.
Or if you can just run it for longer, then it would should be sufficient for the disk. For SSD, I would run much shorter experiments for the steady state to be reached.
The only thing is that if we run it too long, then vanilla will do the same as non-blocking write, because there will be a point where everything is cached, not only the metadata but also the data.
So, but the size of the file is large, right?
Okay. Yeah, it was 5 gigabytes, and we were dealing with less than a gigabyte. So yeah, going that, we never expect of this behavior when we went to 15 seconds, because we were on the thing, let's run it faster and see if they change.
Well, we didn't even know that the metadata is being accessed on every data.
No, it's not really, because we saw that it's cached. It will be accessed the first time.
Yeah. No, but I think what I didn't expect is that the block addresses for a random offset in the page had to be retrieved by retrieving the metadata. That is the part that I didn't really think about. When I was thinking about caching, I was thinking about, okay, the page, it's a simple lookup in the cache if it exists. If not, issue the read for the page. Well, it's not as simple as that. You need to know where to read from, so you need to get the metadata as well.
Yeah, and the worst part is that if it's a deep chain, you need to read every step synchronously before going to the other step, because you need to know the data already.
Yep. That's true. That is true. Good motivation for computing file offsets instead of indexing file offsets. But that's really hard. It's a hard problem. And you'll have lots of collisions.
Okay.
I mean, instead of, you know, computing disk address is given an offset.
How do you do that?
No, I'm saying you can compute it instead of store it. Right, so given an offset and a file name, create a hash function to...
Oh, you mean create a new file system?
Yeah.
Instead of using indexes, do a static.
Yeah.
Not static, but...
Let's assume that you have a sparse address space, but then you need a layer below that will map the sparse address space down to the available physical address space. Maybe that layer can be optimized. Not sure. It's an interesting project to think about.
So, well, that pretty much was what I found out this week. I didn't make much progress on the new implementation more than...
You mean the lazy?
I was looking at... I was doing baby steps, just looking at the infrastructure that Luis has for Anonymous to move it to file system. And just revisiting the code, because I couldn't believe that they were not catching that. Especially because I had this thing in mind that for the sequential stream, we were doing better.
Well, that's pretty good. The random one, it seems like non-blocking byte is better.
The sequential stream will do better because in one indirect block you address many of them.
Exactly. So that's why I had to. To my understanding, there has to be a cache, because if not, we will have the same problem for sequential. If you discard it every
good
time.
Good intuition. Yeah. That's good intuition. Okay. So at least we have some explanation now.
Yeah.
Because
we got a good result for SSDs. At least we were always better.
Yes, Lewis?
So I was going to say I missed just a couple of minutes of the meeting. So,
okay. That was the most important part.
Yeah, so, okay, so in this graph, it seems like non-blocking writes better, right? In random, at least in the left side.
That's SSD.
Oh, that's the SSD.
So we are, with SSD, we are populating the page cache for metadata much faster.
Right, that makes sense. Okay. And so even in that case, why are we better? I mean, after all, the data also can be populated really fast, right?
Okay, you explain.
Okay, the thing is that I had the assumption that we were missing metadata, let's say first 15 seconds of execution, we were missing metadata once every 10 reads.
Okay.
So since a disk had a very low ratio of I/O,
rate of I/O,
we were not able to cache the whole metadata, and we were missing every time. So
In 15 seconds,
the whole time of the experiment, and we were not able to explode the non-blocking write benefits.
Oh,
on SSD, since the rate of I/O is higher, in the 15 seconds, in probably the first seconds of the execution, we were able to cache the whole metadata. And then, of course, we could see the benefit of non-blocking write.
Got it.
So that explains why on disk we do...
They still don't have
worse than the SSD, but we don't know why it's worse than vanilla. at
Makes
all.
Sense.
I think the reason we are worse is because the patches require memory, additional memory. But
we are consistently worse for different memory sizes.
Okay, so there's still a mystery that you need
to
solve.
Yeah, so I still don't know why we're worse.
What is the question again? The question is why we are worse on the disk?
On the disk than vanilla.
Oh, yeah. I mean, based on your explanation, it makes sense, right?
No, based on my explanation, I can explain why we're worse on disks compared to SSDs. I mean, non-blocking write with non-blocking write. But why, on just looking at this, why non-blocking write is worse than vanilla?
It's worse than vanilla.
Yes, on the random case. If you see the graphs.
Well, it's because what you explained, right? I mean, the problem is that in the SSD, you have the chance to do much more I/O. So let's say that in the SSD case, all the I/Os that it did, only 10% of them were metadata. While in the disk case, given that it's so slow, 100% of the time was only metadata.
Okay, but what we're trying to... The new question is not comparing SSDs with disk. It's on the disk case, comparing non-blocking write with vanilla.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. So
why?
You can think of...
Vanilla will have the same problem of fetching the metadata. It should be the same.
Oh, I see.
To me, the worst case should be the same. We shouldn't do worse, and I still don't understand why that happens, but that's another mystery.
That's the mystery of the week.
Yes. Yeah, and if you see on the random reads where we don't have non-blocking writes, they do exactly the same.
If anything, we should do slightly better, because at least we are doing async on the data part.
Except that we are competing for the cache with our patches. So
yeah, but the thing is that even if we increase the memory size 4 times, we see the same degradation. So that's why, to me, it doesn't seem related to the memory or competing with the cache for space. Because if not, at least we'll see a even bigger degradation if we go in lower memory sizes. It is a constant degradation.
That's all.
Mystery of the week.
Well.
Okay, we have to stop because the next set of people are here.
Yeah, okay.
Hey, Luis, how are you?
Hey, how's it going?
All right.